You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Brilliant celebrations from the Italians then after beating England in the final of Euro 2020. How much did you enjoy that, Stephen?
I promise not to gloat.
When did you make that promise? Why do you do that? Steve Nichols here, as is Ali Moreno. Frank LaBeouf's final day in the studio. No.
Yeah.
What a sad moment for us all.
I know, I'm sure.
Meanwhile, Italy celebrate. England have taken it very well, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
It all ends in tears. It hurts. Oh, no, not again. Heartbreak. A lot of questions, of course, about the penalty takers and why, in fact, it was Saka, a teenager, who took the last one. It's what Southgate said. I decided on the penalty takers based on what they've done in training. That's my call. It totally rests with me. We worked through them in training. This is the order we came to. We knew they were the best takers we had left on the pitch. This was the reaction when the boys heard that quote on yesterday's show.
That's the most insane sentence that I ever read in football. I choose the player, we're going to kick the penalty. It never worked like that. It will never work like that.
If I'm a Grealish character and I know I'm a £100 million player, potentially, right. Talk of I'm going to Man City, super talent, experienced. I think I'm saying, listen, forget the 19-year-olds. I'm going to take that responsibility.
I agree with you. A Jack Grealish would have been more ready than Saka or Sancho.
Roy Keane with similar sentiments, saying if you're Sterling or Grealish, you cannot sit there and watch a kid walk up ahead of you. You can't. Jack Grealish responding to that quote, saying, I said I wanted to take one. The gaffer has made so many right decisions through this tournament, and he did tonight. But I won't have people say that I didn't want to take a penno when I said I will. Let's welcome in, shall we, Nader Manua to the show. Nader, what do you make of it all?
Sorry, one second. I need to just show support to my team.
Oh, there we go. Look at that.
I thought he was going to put an England.
Yeah, it's interesting. No, it's interesting. Listening to the show yesterday, you know, there were some takes which you guys were delivering. And I don't fully agree with everything that's being said because I understand the process which they use because I was part of that same sort of formula when I was playing under 21s in 2009. And there are players who want to take penalties, but as far as it goes, you know, what they do in training, even though it can't replicate that big moment, that stuff does matter. And I think for those England players, the ones who step forward, they would understand why somebody is going ahead of them or why that order is how it was, because they've seen those people step up and strike penalties. It's the same sort of argument where, say, someone funny might step up to take a free kick from 20 yards out. And from the outside, we look and say, why is this guy taking it? Well, the reason he's taking it is because this is what they've practiced. This is what they've seen. So it makes sense to them. And, you know, obviously, once you lose a penalty shootout, you analyse everything. But for me, the fact is, you know, like, look at the penalty shootout. Jordan Pickford saved the same amount of penalties as Donnarumma. But because England missed one more, everything's wrong with England, but everything's great for Italy. And that's something I don't really buy into.
Stevie, what was your take on it all regarding the way in which the penalties were set up and the fact you've got Saka, a youngster, in his debut tournament, taking that fifth penalty?
I have absolutely no problem with him taking a penalty at all. None whatsoever. I do, however, have a problem taking the fifth one. If it was my choice, I would have had him going either first or second.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, he's standing there thinking about this for, what, 15 minutes?
Yes.
And he's a teenager and he's inexperienced. Mm. So that's the only thing. I've got no problem with taking it, but he should have taken it earlier. Should have taken it first. Harry Kane and Maguire should have been the one taking the fifth penalty. No question.
What about the argument that Jack Grealish should have taken one ahead of Saka?
Well, to Nadim's point, why is Jack Grealish getting put ahead of Saka? Because Saka's probably stuck 10 out of 10 away in training and said, I want to take a penalty. I'm going to score. So, you know, are you going to turn round the day of and say, well, Jack Grealish is more experienced? Now, Jack Grealish has taken 5 penalties in training and missed 4 of them, but because he's more experienced, mm-hmm. let's make Jack Grealish take the penalty. Why would you do that? That makes no sense either. The kid was confident of scoring from a penalty spot. And that's why I don't have a problem taking it. But not at number 5. That's the only problem.
Stevie, that's not the point. I think the point is not if somebody should have taken the penalty instead of somebody else. It's the point that Gary Southgate tells us that he decides who's going to shoot or who's not going to shoot. So it's nice that Grealish said,
who else is going to do it?
No. But I'm saying, let me finish. Jack Grealish said, okay, I'm ready to shoot. No, you don't shoot. Okay, why? We don't have the answer that the 5 players who shot were ready to shoot it.
I'm sure they were ready to shoot
it. He doesn't say that, because otherwise he would have said, you know what, fine. I decide, but they were okay to shoot it. They didn't say that.
If 6 people say I'm taking it,
yeah,
who decides who the 5 are?
So
the coach.
Then the coach.
Well, there you go.
That's
so
not his saying.
Answer.
That's not his saying. He's saying, I choose who's going to shoot or not. For me, I hear, even if you don't agree, even if you don't want to shoot, you're going to shoot it. That's what I hear. That's not the same story. If Saka say, I want to shoot, I have no problem. But it's not what I hear. I hear that some players were forced to shoot. Otherwise, what is the reason to say I decide who shoots or not?
Frank, there's not a coach in the world who's going to say, by the way, you're hurting it.
Yeah. Well, it's what he said.
Every single coach I've ever spoken to, and I've done it myself, I've asked every single one, do you want to take one or are you not sure? That's the question.
Right, exactly.
And you either get yes or, well, if you want. It's either yes or if you want. And then the coach picks.
Stevie,
and then judging by what you've done in practice,
I totally agree
that's
with
how you get your start.
I totally agree with you. But I don't regret any word of that, what I said yesterday. When I heard Gary Southgate at the press conference after the game, he said, I decide who is the taker. When you say that, it means even if they don't want, they go for it. Otherwise, what's the point to say that?
I think it's a little bit of semantics there, Frank. I think what he's saying is essentially taking the responsibility away from the players. And look, I made the choices. This is not about players that didn't want to take a penalty and allow the 19-year-old to take a penalty. I made the choice as to who was going to be in the order because of what I've observed in training.
If it's that, there is no argument. You know, there is no discussion. So why Roy Keane is saying that? Why?
The argument is that it shouldn't be a 19-year-old who's got no experience.
Then if it's that, I go with Stevie. I don't have any problem. Then Saka, if he wanted to shoot the penalty, goes for it.
But Saka's never taken a penalty in his life. What a time to do it when you have Raheem Sterling has been in a penalty shootout.
So it means that Gary Southgate has something to do with the takers, that right. he chose between Saka and Grealish.
Yes, yeah, and he's saying, that's what he's saying. This is Robert. Nadim?
Sorry to jump in. Like, there were some great points being made there, and I think, Frank, it is a case of semantics. Like, Southgate has decided what the order would be from 1 through to 11. He hasn't decided somebody won't take a penalty, because if you're on the field, there's a chance you'll take the penalty. But that is the best lineup of players according to what they've done and how they feel in the moment, which is exactly why, towards the end of the game, like, when they made that substitution to bring on, say, Sancho and Rashford, because they would be two of their best penalty takers, and Southgate would have 100% asked them, can you take a penalty? Will you take a penalty? And those guys, to their credit, said yes. And then when we talk about, say, Saka being 19 or whatever, and talk about experience, experience is relative in relation to what you're talking about, because Saka's played 9 games for England, Grealish has played 12. Mm. We're talking about Grealish like he's played in multiple tournaments for England. And those penalties which England took, in my lifetime, you know, we can talk about the struggles of England in terms of international football. Those five penalties that those players took are the most amount of pressure any England player has ever been under at all. So it's not a normal situation for that group of guys. So anybody who said that they wanted to take one and they had a back in terms of the fact that they'd scored some in training, like, credit to them. There was going to be no way. Like, Grealish doesn't take one because someone else, two other people missed them before him. But he was in line. That was England's structure. And that's just the way that it is. For Southgate, it doesn't deserve to be attacked, because those players on the field would have understood 100% why the order was what it was. But from the outside, because we don't see how that all runs, we throw our expectations on it.
I have no problem. If it's just that, I have no problem whatsoever. Right. Quarterfinal of the World Cup against Italy, Trezeguet, 20 years old, and Thierry Henry, 20 years old, went for it. And they scored. Mm. Lizarazu, 28 years old, he missed it. We went through, but I have no problem as long as the player decides. Right. If it's a question of orders and who's going to shoot, I have no problem.
My only problem with Southgate, to be quite honest with you, is the timing of the substitution of Sancho and Rashford, because you don't give these guys an opportunity to actually have a meaningful touch on the ball before they actually step onto the penalty spot to take a penalty.
Let's get on into that, shall we? This was the starting 11, as you rightly mentioned. Sancho and Rashford coming off in the 120th minute. Before we hear what the boys have to say, this was Stuart Robson's reaction to those subs.
You can warm up as much as you like. You haven't kicked a ball. You don't have a ball on the side of the field. So the first touch they're going to have in the for ages will be that penalty kick under huge pressure in the final of the European Championship. It's an idiotic decision. You know, and as they walked up, I think the group of people I was with said, oh, these two are going to miss. They're not warmed up. They're not in the game. And that was the case with Sancho and Rashford. It was an amazing decision. And I don't know what was going through Southgate or the coach's mind.
Back in 2006, Jamie Carragher was subbed on in the 119th minute against Portugal to take a penalty. He missed his as well. He tweeted, never easy to take a penalty, even more pressure when you're brought on for that reason. England have had a great tournament, but Italy just deserved it. Nadim.
Oh, this is killing me so much. This is killing me so much, honestly. Like, hearing this, like, I want you guys to explain to me then, what is a suitable warm-up to be able to take a penalty? Because when we compare football to other sports, it's hard. But this is an instance of one particular thing, which essentially is in a vacuum. Like, the pressure exists, but the pressure will exist for anybody who's taken a penalty in general. So why is it, because you played 2 hours worth of football, you're better off taking a penalty than somebody who's just come on the field? Like, you're kicking a ball from 12 yards unopposed. No fitness is required. You have to score a goal. Like, what's the feel of a game? Like, when someone comes on the field and they score with their first touch, are we saying it's a miracle because it was their first touch? Or are we saying, well, they came on the field and they scored with their first touch? Like, it's a very, very unique skill. Why does that require a particular warm-up or whatever, or a feel for the game?
I absolutely agree 100% what Nadim said. And I'd like to add to that.
Right.
So you tell me, or somebody please explain to me, how it's better for the team to have two guys on the field who clearly ain't taking a penalty and maybe don't want to, I don't know, but are probably just not good at... Not everybody can take a penalty.
Right.
It's not easy to take a penalty. The greatest players in the world miss. Messi's missed a ton of them.
Yep.
That's how difficult it is.
You miss one.
I've missed one. Yep. It's not easy. And that's why I kept out the road from not taking another one. So please, can somebody explain to me why it's a better idea to keep two guys on the field who you know aren't good at penalties, to bring two others on who are quite happy to take a penalty kick? Why does that make more sense?
No, of course it doesn't make more sense if those two players are feeling good enough to take them on. But the thing is, maybe 5 minutes before or 10 minutes before, it would be, to just put them into the situation.
Oh, I guess what? Let's sacrifice losing the game then.
Why do you want to sacrifice?
Let's bring them on 10 minutes before. You take Henderson off for a start, so you bring her on two forwards, and so you're going to sacrifice 10 minutes of the game.
Why don't you think you can win the game because of those two players?
You're willing to sacrifice 10 minutes at the end of the game
for
90 minutes and another 20 minutes of extra time, and you say, well, we'll bring them on with 10 minutes to go. What if you lose the game in the 10 minutes?
10 minutes of the extra time.
Yeah, what if you lose the game, Frank?
Can I just say, all I'm asking for is that the first meaningful touch that these players have on the field is not taking a penalty. The situation, in a perfect setup, it's still pressure-packed. And ideally, for anybody who steps to that position, it's already pressure-packed. But when your first touch, meaningful touch in the game, it is focused merely on that, on taking a penalty, that pressure has now magnified. Anybody who steps on the field in this sort of situation would be nervous, right? And how do you get rid of those nerves? You get a couple of sprints in. You complete a couple of passes. Now you feel like you're into the game. Now you're more likely to be in a position. Yeah,
we'll understand that.
That's all I'm saying.
My question is, right, here's my question, and I just want a straight answer.
Okay.
My question is, would you rather have two guys coming on?
No, but they were going to be on the field. They were going to be on the field. I didn't say don't make a substitution. Just make it a little earlier.
I understand the whole. I understand every single thing that you're saying. And yes, in an ideal world, get them on with some time, get a couple of touches, the whole thing. Yes, in an ideal world. Well, when you're playing in the Euro Champions final, it's not an ideal world. You've got to balance what I was arguing with Frank about bringing them on too early. You end up losing the game.
No, of course, TV. But
with do you bring on two players who haven't touched the ball, which I agree 100% with, or do you keep two guys on who you know either aren't good at taking penalties or don't want to take penalties? I mean,
if you're so afraid of losing the game by playing Sancho and Marcus Rashford for 10 minutes ahead of the penalties, then you got bigger issues. Then maybe you should.
Are you going to play Sancho or Rashford in the centre midfield? Maybe this is part of the reason as to why England loses the match because actually after they scored, they were protecting.
They were afraid of actually going forward. They went back to the team that they were in the group stage where they were unable to create chances and unwilling to create chances. Maybe that conservative approach is the thing that should change in the end.
That's funny that I try to understand the feeling that you have when you say that. But I'm with Ali, totally with Ali, in the fact that it wouldn't change anything because I really think that Italy wanted to go to the penalties and England too. So everybody was kind of ready, waiting for the 120-something minutes to stop and go for the penalties. I followed an interview and discussion, an argument between Rio Ferdinand, who barely shot penalties in his career, and Alan Shearer, who shot all the penalties for Newcastle, for England, and said, I wouldn't have loved to come in, just come on, and shoot the penalty without touching the ball. Right. I shot more than 50 penalties in my career. I tell you, with no being on the field before, not feeling the atmosphere, not feeling a little bit of it, and touching a little bit of the ball, it would have been a nightmare for me to shoot a penalty.
It would have been tough.
Crazy.
But you'd still rather have two guys that don't want to take one or can't take one. That's the point.
We're running out of time here, Nathan.
Exactly. I was going to say, that's the balance. Because you're talking about Alan Shearer, who is a penalty taker. Think about Jordan Henderson and Kyle Walker, who won't be penalty takers, who have no confidence in that situation. But Which one is better? A penalty taker that's mildly inconvenienced, or two players who can't maybe take a penalty at all? Which one is better?
You absolutely want to tell us that because, and that was the question from Alejandro before, why putting Marcus Rashford and Sancho will be automatically a defeat for England for the last 10 minutes.
Well, you can't have Rashford playing it right back.
I don't care.
Then you lose the game.
Why are you sure you're going to lose the game because you put Marcus Rashford, who cannot defend?
Let me tell you, Frank.
Sancho, let me tell you, Frank.
When you sat on a sideline and you've got your players in front of you, right?
Yeah.
You can see every single thing that is going wrong and may go wrong. And if you want to stick two players on who are attacking players, one in the centre of the midfield and the other one at right back, with 3 or 4 minutes to go, I'll tell you what, that's a long 3 or 4 minutes for a coach.
Yeah, I'm very surprised that some players, because we talked about, for example, John Stones. talented, technical player. And, you know, I understand Desailly and Deschamps didn't take the penalties. They were fighters, water carrier, let's say, defenders, not very technically, you know, secure. But those
players...
Not
everybody can take a penalty.
Frank, those, you're the exception. Players, you're the exception.
Just because you... Under,
you are
just
the
because
exception.
It's easy
no,
for
no,
you.
No, no, no. Laurent Blanc did it. I mean, so many players, defenders did it. And Johnston could have
tell
gotten
you what,
one.
I played with some... Some players who were regarded as the best of the time, who wouldn't go near a penalty kick.
Alan Ensign wasn't shooting penalties?
Wouldn't go near a penalty kick. One of the greatest defenders, footballers, you ask him to make a 20-yard pass or a 30-yard pass or a 5-yard pass,
right.
he would have a cigar out, a cup of tea, and then he'd flick it around. But when it came to a penalty kick, he wanted nothing to do with it. Right. It's just, not everybody can take penalty kicks,
okay,
including me.
Last word now to Nathan.
Yes, he deserves it.
Oh, yeah, listen, in the end, Italy deserved to win the game, so we can talk about penalties all we want, but there's more balance to it, and the disaster is only a disaster. Because, exactly, just purely because, like, these guys stepped up, but it could have been a masterstroke, but it went the wrong way, and we always tend to overreact when it comes to penalty kicks. So that's me done. Have a great day.
Well, you're one of those people that can't really pull off hats, aren't you, Neil?
Yeah, just a reminder, you can check out Extra Time over on our YouTube channel. The Voice saying later, answer your tweets.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
As you would expect, nice feel to the pages of the Italian newspaper. We take a look at the front pages from all around the country, very much celebrating, of course, that victory against England at Wembley. They had the parade today. Hundreds of thousands turning up to celebrate their victory. And let's welcome in, shall we? Gab Marcotti is with us. Gab, how are you?
I'm good. I'm running on just a couple hours sleep, but all told, it was pretty good watching, you know, Italy go into their house and take it.
And the best team of the tournament won.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think it doesn't always happen, but I think over the course of the tournament, over the seven games, I don't see who would make an argument there. It's true that they were outplayed by Spain in the semifinal, and, you know, I think they could have lost that game, but then Spain had other games where they were poor in the tournament and could have gone out. So on balance, for me, Italy were the best team in the tournament, and they lifted the trophy.
Who's getting the most credit for this, Gab? Is it Mancini?
I think above all, it's Mancini. I mean, look, we've talked endlessly on the show about how he's turned things around in 3 years, you know, doing a hard handbrake turn on 100 years of Italian national team history in terms of the way they played, by being cautious, by being defending, by defending deep, sitting deeper and deeper, trying to nick things at the other end. Basically kind of how England played much of the tournament. And he said, no, we're going to go in a different direction. We're going to try to play modern football. We're going to try to play the way club teams play. We're going to press you high up the pitch. We're going to be positive. We're going to take risks. And we're going to play this way. Even if we don't have a team packed with superstars up front, or we have a less talented team than we've had in the past, that's fine. We're still going to go out there and try to do it cohesively, and it worked.
They've been fun to watch throughout.
No question. Mm. And I love the fact that he, regardless of the opposition, they went out and played the way they play, because playing the way they did, they're at their best doing this.
Right.
You know, he didn't do what England did and change formations and try and change some tactics and change this and change that. He was like, right, teams are going to have to beat us. Now, it's true, Spain probably outplayed them.
Yeah.
But you know what? you'll take that one. The rest of the time, 100%, they were the best side. They were the best side to watch, and they deserve to win this tournament, doing it their way.
We've been educated throughout our life and in football with a certain way of seeing Italy playing, where for the past 3 years we saw a dramatic change of thinking the football, and it works. You have to admire the mentality Italians have, because it's not a big country. In Europe, France, Germany, I don't know if England is bigger than Italy.
We think we are.
Well, no, I'm talking about the number of people living there, but it's not a big country. But the mentality over there about football, it's a real religion. They think, they eat, they drink about football, and they're capable of changing the way they've been playing for like 40 years and have that kind of results. You have to say, hat off.
And while it is true that Italy was more about the collective than the individuals, I have to tell you, this team had a lot of good players out on the field. You watch a kid like Federico Chiesa play and you think to yourself, man, why was this guy not starting from the very beginning of the tournament? And how much of a difference maker he was. Up until the injury, Spinazzola, you could make the argument, had been the best player in the tournament, and how much of a difference maker he was down the left-hand side. Insigne, very good when he gets into those spaces in which it's very difficult for the defensive midfielder to address his position, because you don't know whether you stay on Insigne or whether the center back steps to him. He is a matchup issue every time that he floats with and without the ball. Chiellini, of course. Bonucci, of course. Donnarumma, of course. And you start going up and down the field, and they may not be superstars, but they're not far from it. Mm. They still have a lot of good players on the field, and then you get that mentality that you're talking about, that energy that you're talking about, that sense of belief, and what you get is a team that from the very first game they played against Turkey up until the final, yes, a little bit of a dip against Spain, but it was the one team that you could say, you know what, yeah, this is the team that belongs in a final. You couldn't say the same thing about England and the rest of the teams in this tournament. England was all over the place in the group stage, whereas Italy, they just kept getting better and better and better. They survived Spain, and then after that, all the way to the final.
Gab, I don't remember Mancini's Manchester City being this fun to watch.
No, I mean, obviously they did win their first Premier League title since the late 60s. But you're right. This is the thing about Mancini. He's played many different styles throughout his career. His first Lazio side were a very attacking side. His first Inter side as well. Then Ibrahimovic came and it became more about defend and counter. City certainly a lot more results driven. His return to Inter certainly a lot more defensive and results driven. Look, he's not one of those guys who has a big philosophy, a big idea. He's one of those guys who knows his football inside out and says, you know what, I'm going to adapt a system based on the group of players I have, our particular circumstances, and kind of the way the other teams are playing and what I think works right now. And, you know, he said this very explicitly. You look around Europe, who are the good teams? How do they play? How do Manchester City play? How do Liverpool play? How do Barcelona play on a good day? And, you know, other than a couple exceptions, like Atletico Madrid, maybe a bit of Juventus, the teams that have won in Europe, talking club sides, and this is the other great thing he did, he created club mentality, they all play a certain way. They all play proactive football. They all take risks. They all press high up the pitch. And he said, let's go out and do that. And maybe that'll be the edge that we can gain because, you know, if we go up player for player against, say, France or maybe even Belgium, then they will have more talent.
Gav, is there any scenario in which he won't be in charge of Italy going into the World Cup next year? I.e., is there a possibility he could leave to go to a big club given this victory?
I mean, this is football, right? So never say never. I would be absolutely shocked if it happened. I certainly don't, you know, given that the World Cup at this stage is 18 months away, I think if it did happen, it would have to happen now. Like before the new season starts, because I don't think he would walk out with 6 months to go. But honestly, I think, you know, he said he wants to get back into club management at some point, but he was just so moved by what happened, by the spirit they created in the group, by the possibilities of what could happen in Qatar when, you know, they'll have some other injured guys back. First and foremost, Nicola Zaniolo, probably Italy's most talented player, who missed the tournament through injury. So I think right now this is the furthest thing from his mind.
A lot more from Gab on the Gab and Jules podcast. Be sure to check that out over on the website. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. This weekend saw Argentina, of course, win the Copa America, defeating Brazil by 1-0. Angel Di Maria scoring the winner, but it's all about Lionel Messi picking up his first piece of silverware for Argentina. This is what he had to say about it. I need to get the thorn out from my side of not being able to achieve something with the national team. The happiness I feel is crazy, inexplicable. Many times I've dreamed of this. I wanted to dedicate it to my family, my wife, my children, my parents, my brothers, who many times had to suffer, just like me or even worse. We'd always go on vacation and spend the first few days sad as we hadn't won anything. This time is different. Ali, we talked yesterday, and just from a football fan's point of view, you could only feel happy for him.
Yeah. Absolutely, unless you're a Ronaldo fan, and then, of course...
Oh, yes, and you need to get into all that.
Yeah, not so much. In any case, I think what you need, all you need to see and all you need to hear is the reaction of his teammates when the final whistle went. They all went to Lionel Messi. They all were around Lionel Messi. Everybody's heard the criticism, including the players in that locker room, and... I think there was a sense of we are indeed going to do it for Messi.
Yeah.
And that's the way that this team played. They defended and defended so well and sometimes violently, but defended and to the point to where organized, pragmatic in the manner that they play and say, you know what, we have Messi. He's going to do a little something magical for us and that's going to be enough. We're going to score an early goal and we're going to absorb pressure. And they did this throughout the tournament. But the commitment that was there from all Argentina players and Lionel Messi and Lionel Scaloni, the coach, and saying, this is the way that we are going to be capable of winning in Maracanã, which they never done.
Yeah.
And so to be able to do it in that manner, I think goes a long way in providing us with a platform in which we can say, this whole conversation about Messi and Argentina and his inability to deliver for Argentina, that can go away for a little while. We don't have to talk about that anymore. And I think the players were tired of listening to that as well. And so that's why the reaction of love and appreciation for Messi from his teammates was so clear to see.
What's cool is that he's won millions of trophies with Barcelona, yet the way he celebrated and what he's saying afterwards as well just shows that there's still a little boy in kind of all of these players, you know, that you just dream of winning something for your country.
Well, I think, you know, all the things Ali was saying about how his teammates wanted to do it for him, that only comes about because he wants to do it for them.
Right.
You know, this is not, I just feel sorry for somebody and we'll try very hard for them. This is somebody who they genuinely, in their heart, want to do well for.
Yeah.
Because they know that he's done it for them for so long.
Right.
That they probably felt as though they had let him down. And so when you put all that together, that's why it's so fantastic. Mm. And it's great because it was one of those things that even when somebody asks you who's the greatest player ever, there's no question, he's got to be in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
But you knew what was coming next.
Right.
Yeah, but he's never done anything with Argentina. And as much as you hated it, as much as when you understand how good he is, you can't argue with that. Well, guess what? You don't have to argue against it anymore. And he doesn't have to argue against it. It's in black and white. The facts are there. He's taking his team, his Argentina team, to a major championship.
And the other thing that I thought was really interesting from the other players' perspective is the idea that anytime there was a failure for Argentina, instead of focusing on a miss by Higuain or on a miss by somebody else, it all went back to, well, that's Lionel Messi failing with Argentina once again. Mm-hmm. And so you can't help but, as a teammate, to think, you know what, he is taking that on his shoulders for years upon years upon years. It's time to get that load off his shoulders. It's time for us to do our part as well. And this team came together really, really well. They knew their limitations. They played to their strength, and it showed on the field.
It just proved that to his nation that he's not Spanish, that he's from Argentina. Mm-hmm. So now it's done. You know, I was pleased when Ronaldo, even he was against France, when he won the Euro, because he won for his country. And again, it's very nice to see Messi winning something for his country.
You know, people
say,
what? It's not a World Cup.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe. But you don't know what's going to happen in a year and a half from now. Mm-hmm. Because I saw a poor Argentina against France during the World Cup in Russia. Mm-hmm. I saw them against Croatia being beaten like 3-0. I said, my God, that's not Argentina that I'm used to see.
Yes.
They are back to a very good football, and the contenders. I think the contenders for the next World Cup.
Well, one of Lionel Messi's teammates is on the move. Rodrigo de Paul is going to Atleti. That was confirmed this week. He's joined a five-year deal, €35 million. He joined Udinese back in 2016. What sort of player are they getting here, Gab?
I think they're getting a really interesting player. He's a guy who's afforded a lot of freedom at Udinese. And, you know, he certainly is high energy, box to box. He's got a really good range of passing, as you saw when he set up Di Maria on that goal as well. I'm slightly curious. I have no doubts about him at Atleti in terms of quality. My one question mark would be, you know, he doesn't really seem like a Simeone player in terms of fitting in kind of that team ethos, that tactical discipline, not because he can't do it, but simply because he was given a lot of license over Atletico Madrid, over Udinese, but certainly a quality player, a guy who's grown a lot the last couple of years.
Rodrigo de Paul was, in my opinion, the player of the match in the final against Brazil. And he was doing a lot of Atletico de Madrid sort of work through the midfield. In fact, I look at this as a perfect match for Rodrigo de Paul, if indeed he's asked to do the same sort of job that he does for Argentina.
Right.
And a lot of it is dirty work with quality. And that's, I think, the difference. A guy who can do the dirty work but can also complete passes through the midfield, can also switch the point of attack, and can also join in the attack when need to be. So I really do think that Rodrigo de Paul can thrive under Diego Simeone.
So that deal done. Just a reminder, keep up with all the latest news. You can go to Transfer Talk over on our website. Atleti open the defence of their title against Celta Vigo. Meanwhile, it's Real Madrid against Alaves. Barca play host to Real Sociedad. All of these games, in fact, for the whole season, will be available on ESPN+.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Kicked off their Gold Cup campaign in some style, of course, with a comfortable victory over Haiti.
I didn't want Frank to get angry.
1-0.
Comfortable win. 1-0.
Well, the scoreline flatters Haiti. Canada and the U.S. then sitting first and second. Remember, it's the top two that advance. Of course, for more on this, you can check out Football Americas. Here is Sevenhut.
Thank you very much, Dan. I'm missing you and the boys already after a great month in Connecticut covering Euros. And now, look at me. I'm stuck with this guy, Hercules Gomez of Football Americas. Underwhelming at best, but not nearly as underwhelming, Herc, perhaps, as the United States' performance against Haiti on Sunday night. They do get the 1-0 win and the 3 points in Group B. An early goal from Sam Vines, the difference. But, Herc, if we had to grade this performance from the U.S., what marks are you giving them?
Wow, I said this was a C team, and that's what it is, a C team. I'd give it a C, and a C minus at that. This starting lineup, if there was any way to uninspire your fan base even more, it's this lineup. And listen, they may be different players, but it's the same type of result. The defensive instability in transition, that early goal from Sam Vines was as good as it got. Haiti, a team that we can give them all the credit in the world, but on paper, the U.S. should probably handle a little bit better, really took it to him, and it could have been a lot different. It's a lot more questions than answers out of this performance.
Haiti was dangerous, and they were dangerous against the U.S. with 37% possession. Herc, how do we explain that?
Just what I said exactly, transition, defensive transition. The very first play of the game or plays of the game offensively, Sam Vines is up in the offensive third, so is Shaq Moore. They lose the ball, and all of a sudden it's 1v1, down your throats, on your end, Matt Turner having to come up with the save. It's these things that it doesn't matter who's playing for Greg Berhalter. With that system, if you don't have the ball, it's a liability. And sometimes in that system, Greg Berhalter and their players aren't good enough in said system to get away with it. So when you can't get away with it, you give life to these teams like Haiti. In Haiti, on their day, a little bit sharper in front of goal could have really put the U.S. men's national team in back burner.
8 players, 23 and under, on this team, Herc. Any of the young guns stand out to you?
A few. It was limited time, but I enjoyed what I saw from Busio. I enjoyed what I saw from Eric Williams, James Sands. I thought they brought composure. I thought Busio in the center of the field was excellent. A little nervy at first, but once he settled into the game in front of his home crowd, he really came to life. And in him, you see a player that's box-to-box with the ability, some defensive bite, but quality in the final third. And Eric Williams, I think, is going to be a nice little presence next to Busio if you can get that going. And maybe this team is suited for a 3-man back line. More than a 4-3-3. Now that Paul Arriola is out, one of the true wingers left.
So you gave the U.S. a C. I can't wait to find out what you're going to give Mexico after they drew with Trinidad and Tobago on Saturday. If you want to know about that, you got to watch the next episode of Football Americas. Dan, back to you.
A lot more from The Voice, of course, available now. Football America's on ESPN Plus. Also streaming on Plus. If you haven't checked it out yet, be sure to watch Abby's Place, which is streaming now. That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show as we bid adieu to
Adieu, listen to you.
But go on, finish your
Our seven. Friend.
Yes. Our friend. Oh, wow, it was hard to say. I'm so happy to go back to my country now.
We all are.
I know you're more happy than me to see
there is you are going home.
There is
I'm
one
going
more.
Home. I'm going home.
There's one more thing to
Frankie's
do.
Frankie's going home.
One more thing to do. Extra time is next. Be sure to stay.
He's not going home yet.
Yeah. Not yet.
Unfortunately.
Sorry.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Stevie with us, as is Ali. Frank's last day in the studio.
Don't pretend, guys, you're sad.
Well, I don't think we were pretending that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Nadim is here with us as well.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Nadim, of course, was sporting an ESPN hat during the show. Would you like to see how he was wearing it, Frank?
Oh, yes, I want to see it.
Yeah, there we go. Too old to have it backwards.
Oh, that's not really comfortable.
That doesn't
really
work. Comfortable.
There we go.
That's good.
That's a good one.
Beautiful.
Bravo, bravo. Oh, no, well done, yeah. Well done.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, Nathan. There we go.
I get the guy, he's tired.
Thank you.
Okay, Nadim, after the highs and lows for England in Euro 2020, is Southgate still the right man for the job moving forward?
I think so, yes. I think even though England essentially aren't seen as a really successful nation from the outside, you know, this is the best tournament that they've had in my lifetime. So for him to leave now, I think it kind of defeats the purpose. I think this is very much his side, and you have to give him credit for bringing them to this point, because as I say, the days haven't been great before this, but, you know, they made it to a European Championship final.
What about the arguments, really, that things have very much fallen in place for him, Nadim? Made it to the semi-final of the World Cup without really beating anyone. Made it to the final of Euro 2020, where you got pretty much all your games at Wembley. You've only really had to get past Germany, who you would say is a proper elite side in international football, to make it to the final, and yet you still can't get it done.
Listen, this England side have failed to qualify for European Championships and stuff in the past, and you say things have fallen into place. There have been managers who've had Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, Wayne Rooney and people like that in their teams. So let's be very, very clear, just because things seem to be favourable, the fact is they still needed to win games, and that's why you have to give them credit, because they found a way to do it. Like with England in the European Championship, that first group game was the first time they'd won a European opening round game in the country's history. So let's be clear, things are better than we probably realise.
Stevie, why are England incapable of playing expansive football? Are we scared of playing open football and taking risks?
Yes.
Thank you.
the truth is that England, now that the tournament's over, in fact, not just, even during the tournament, I always felt there was more there.
Right.
They just didn't give us what we thought they were capable of. And I can't argue with Nedham. It's tough that a guy would lose his job when you've been to a semi-final at a World Cup and then the final of the Euros, but he just left me feeling as though they were lacking in something. And at the end of the day, I think that comes down to the manager.
Right.
Not only just how he sets his team up, but how he talks to them. What does he want from them? Does he want them to be, you have to be here at this stage, and by the way, you know, if you get a chance, then go forward if you want. As opposed to somebody who might go, see all the tools you've got.
Right.
You can run all day, you're 6'3", you're big and strong, you can win headers, you can run past anybody, you can take anybody on.
Stevie, I'm going,
Listen,
come on!
If you could run it, you can run around with your eyes shut and you can still score goals. You'd be like, imagine 11 England players have been running.
Come on! Let's go, Stevie! Come on! Let's go!
It's funny because we have that kind of discussion for the past 10 years with Didier Deschamps.
Right.
Where we all find he's too defensive, he's not spectacular because of the player that he has. But at the end of the day, the guy won the World Cup.
Yes.
You know, it was a catastrophe, but he keeps his job. So there is something we would love to see. And maybe the
I'm not sure what you're going with, Frank.
Say it in French.
Okay, well, we have a problem.
Any language.
That's the same problem. Because I'm in the mixer.
Let's go to
Spanish.
A bit Scottish.
Well, maybe I'll try Scottish.
A bit Scottish.
Two syllables.
No, the fact,
the root of the word.
The fact that Gareth Southgate wants to think first about setting his team up defensively instead of going for the thing. Thank you. How do you say?
Pragmatism
of Gareth Southgate is exactly what we see with Deschamps. So we as fans or viewers of football, we want something spectacular. We want to see everything. But there is the reality of the game, and sometimes, and you see in the history of football, if you don't have a defense, you don't win anything.
Right.
That's the problem.
Which penalty is more difficult, pressure, the one during the game or during a shootout, Frank?
During the shootout.
Shootout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, something bizarre, you know, going on where the game is over and everybody goes to another frame of mind. During the game, you're in the game, and if it happens something, you can do something about it because it's not over. Even if you miss it, there is some place on, and it's possible to recover from there.
You got a lot of abuse over the last 24 hours.
Oh, no.
Really?
Yes. I know you're not on Twitter, so everyone sends it to me because to pass it on.
Like,
some sort of conduit in this thing, yes. Your comments about Jorginho went down very badly.
With or like I care.
Yes, no, like I know. Just is a sample. He says that the question was, is Jorginho underrated? And Frank's like, I don't really rate him. Defensively, he is weak.
Well, so, let me
say this first, and then you can react.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah,
This is one that doesn't include swear words. Frank, why is Jorginho as a defensive liability? He made the most interceptions in the tournament, more than your mate Desailly in Euro 2000. He's among the top three in the tournament for tackles and ball recoveries, among the top three for most fouled player in the tournaments. Italy only conceded 4 goals.
The thing is, if we are talking all about statistic, I might be wrong, but I think, comparing to those people who never play at my level, well, that's what it is. That's what it is. Especially on Twitter, you have people who know nothing about football and think they are capable of talking about. So I have to answer to your question, but I don't have to answer to that guy who definitely knows nothing about football because it's only on statistics. But after seeing that, I see the globality of the football and the game that I watch. And you can have the intelligence of the players, you can have everything, but there is a reality of movements and everything that I see. And again, I say that Jorginho is a good player with the ball, definitely one of the best midfield players with the ball, but defensively, and I've seen that with Chelsea during the season, and especially at the beginning of the season when Kante wasn't there, Chelsea was struggling. Right. And they were struggling defensively, struggling in the middle of the park.
He's among the top three in the tournament for tackles and ball recovery.
Yeah, statistics again. I don't care about the statistic.
We're not more interceptions than your mate Desailly.
Your mate Desailly. Desailly was the rock. What do you want to compare Desailly with Jorginho? Desailly was in middle of the park with Milan AC. I'm sorry. Do you want to compare Jorginho with Desailly? You're insulting Desailly. Really. I'm going to tell you the truth, and it's not because he's French, but and my friend. No. But really, I think Jorginho is a fantastic player, but defensively, I'm not going to change a word of what I said yesterday. With Kante and or with Bonucci and Chiellini, people working alongside him, he is better.
Right.
He's better, and I don't care about the swearing, about the tweets and everything, because it doesn't exist for me, because I'm not.
So are we only allowed to accept tweets from people who've won the World Cup?
Well,
that's going to be a short list.
No, you should just no. If
very
for
short
example,
list.
Rio Ferdinand, Alan Shearer wants to answer on Twitter about my comment.
Right.
I would carefully listen to them.
Okay. Right.
But the other, I don't
here's
care.
Here's the thing, right? You cannot argue with the stats that whoever sent them in came up with, right? You can't.
They're facts.
You can't argue with that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then you have to say that, you know what, in this tournament, he was great.
Right.
But I'm with Frank. There's a lot of players I would pick to play as a defensive midfield before him.
Right.
It's like Schick. Everybody's talking about how fantastic Schick has been. Schick's had a good tournament. But you know what? There's a reason why Schick's not playing at Real Madrid or Man City or wherever.
Yeah.
Because he can't. He's not.
No.
He doesn't do it all the time. But he doesn't do it enough. So. Yeah.
I go back to the statistic. I'm a player.
Yes.
If I won, I don't lose a ball every game I play.
Okay.
Maybe give like 2-3 yards. You give alongside, and it's good passes. But did I bring something to the football or to my teammates or to the creation?
He's top three for tackles. Tackles and ball recovery.
Hey. Oh, right. Good tackles.
Stevie, who told you about Patrick Schick and how great he is? Who's been telling you this?
I noticed that. Just recently, I remember seeing him a couple of times.
Okay. Stevie. How does it feel for a youngster to miss a crucial penalty in a shootout? Will this hurt? You also are okay.
You want to hide.
You missed, but you won.
I took the first one.
Yeah.
And I missed. And you want to hide.
Yeah.
Basically. You want to become invisible.
I bet.
But then, if you're fortunate enough that I was, that everybody else scored, and you end up winning the penalty shootout, then it's taken in a completely different manner.
Yeah,
you're the one that's messes, right, and you lose. Oh, why was he taking it? What a rotten penalty. Who decided he should take it? Blah, blah, blah. The thing went the complete opposite way with me. It turned into... That was brave, taking the first penalty, being young. And
well, like Jorginho.
Having the courage to do it and all the rest of it. Because I was like, hold on a minute, I missed. And everybody's like sort of congratulating me for taking it and missing it.
Right.
I found strange.
How do you think it would change your career if you hadn't won? And you would have been the reason Liverpool didn't win the European Cup?
I don't know, you can't answer that. I would like to think not an awful lot, to be honest.
Right.
Listen, I had a chance in the World Cup for Scotland and I missed it.
Yeah.
And I still went on and did pretty well.
Hey! So, player of the year, 1989.
I'd like to think that I would just accept it for what it was. And
so you were a lucky penny, in fact, missing all the penalties that you shot, but keep on winning.
Yeah. No, keep World on Cup, winning. World Cup wasn't a penalty, it was a chance.
Oh, it was, okay.
That was a chance.
But Jorginho...
Nobody
cares about the fact that he missed the penalty.
No, of course not, no.
So, it's fine.
It's all in the outcome.
Right, which question do we go now, Frank? Let's just see it, because I'm not sure which order we're doing this now.
Okay.
Okay, Frank, as you leave today, what is the one... No... Chiellini Ramos? Well, I didn't even have that written down.
Oh, good production value. Good job, guys. We're
doing
great.
Is there another page? I've only got one page.
Well, that's all right, you can read.
Okay. Frank,
yeah.
If you could roll back the years and get the opportunity to play alongside one of these three in defence, who would you pick? Chiellini or Ramos?
Ramos. No. No questions whatsoever.
I tell you, you better enjoy it because he'll only be spending 20 minutes with you during a game.
Yeah, and people are going to say I have something against the Italians.
Then he'll be sent off. That's what Steve is saying.
Yeah, but not because I know he doesn't like him, but if I compare the qualities of the two, they are two warriors for sure. But it's just a feeling.
Okay.
And I would say Ramos, yeah.
That's all right. Okay. Next question. Then still no page two.
Wow.
Which night was the disappointment felt more in the Thomas household? Saturday or Sunday? So Saturday, my wife is Brazilian. They, of course, lost Copa America. And then, obviously, yesterday, England. You were with us, so I suppose Saturday was the worst of the two nights.
Yeah, because I was at
you
home.
Were there.
Not because you lost. But you both cracked me up, you know.
Why?
No, the way you were, she was into it for Brazil and how you handled that very well for England. So that was very interesting weekend to see a wife and a husband losing both a game.
Yes.
And going along very well still. Hey, that's fantastic.
Hold on a minute. Misery loves company. Have you ever heard
that? That's what it is.
Misery loves company.
I didn't know that. That's why. That was pretty much appalling.
That's why it was good.
Frank, did you leave today? What is the one fashion trend and one food item that you enjoyed the most in the US? We want to discuss the good parts since you guys have discussed the bad parts too much. By the way, did you try Frank Pepe's pizzeria, Frank?
Where is Frank's Pepe Pizzeria?
So no.
No. I didn't try. We had a very good experience, but I explained to Dan how to eat snails.
Yeah, that was nice. That's not really American, though. Well, what's the one food item that you enjoyed? Snails.
Did we have an American? No. We went to Italian. We went to Barcelona restaurant.
I'm sorry.
We didn't go. Well, what kind of food American?
Did you ever go to New Haven? No.
No, but no. Nadim, you went to New Haven, yes?
Yes.
To have the pizza. How was Sally's pizza?
So Pete, producer Pete's listening now, but I traveled all the way down there.
Yeah.
And the pizza was
average. Was burnt on the edges, but I suppose that's what they say is like that's in a pizza or whatever. So it was. So I've experienced it.
So we're saying it's not that special.
It's special to the people from there, but I'm not from there. Let's say that.
No, Nathan, don't be so political.
Nathan, we just received a text of
overrated rubbish.
Your contract is ending.
Nathan, did
No, keep it.
Did you have any enjoyable moments when you were in the US?
Yeah, I had a ton actually. Being there in that studio was a lot of fun. Obviously, Frank is in my seat, but it was a lot of fun. It's a really good show. Everybody watching, keep watching. It's going to get even better.
I tell you what, I thought Nathan was going to say the moment that him and I did a touchscreen together. Oh, it was wonderful.
Oh, my goodness.
It was magical.
Hey, that speaks for itself. Alan, that speaks for itself. The class, the chemistry, we were absolutely incredible.
Final question. Frank, when you travel overseas, what do you look for first? A good restaurant to eat?
Mm-hmm.
Or a gym to work out at? Also, Frank, does Dan annoy you more live in the studio or when you're at home doing the show remotely?
So the first thing I look for is really a gym, that's for sure. And I was really disappointed because my favorite gym...
Yes, it closed.
It was closed, but I managed to do stuff. The food, I can handle it, you know, that's okay. And I was really pleased, I have to say thank you guys, because I really enjoy being in the studio. It's easier to be here than in the studio, because again, it's like when you come for the last penalty and you just come on, you know, and you kick, you're not there, you're not ready, you don't have the atmosphere, you don't have the feeling, and I'm like Saka when I'm in the studio.
They've cut you off.
No, that's okay, I'm done.
Hey, great to see you, Frank.
Hey, we went the whole show without mentioning Frank won the World Cup 23 years ago.
Hey!
That was the most important line.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.